Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Natakoti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prayam Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Pujalaishu Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharani Namaste Sindhani Bhaskajadi Sitar. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uttarapadakamala Sri Dhanam Vaishnavas Chasri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sadiva Sarvaitam Sarvajutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vitam Sri Vishakam Vitam Sham Manchakapa Jubishchaki Pasindhi Avachapi Chanam Bhavani Vivashnavan Moha Namaha. It's February 29th, 2014, Vienna, Slovenia, and we're going to have a meditation on the first verse of the Shikshastika. If somebody could turn off the light, that would be really nice. What? Oh, it's 1st March. Oh, my watch here. It's not 29th February, right?
No.
Look at that.
Every 4th year.
Every 4th year, yeah, okay. I have to inform my watch. My watch isn't so sophisticated. Thinks every month has 31 days. Okay, first day of March. That's a nice time to start with the first verse of the Shikshastika. And this is the Namyagya day, right? So a nice day to meditate on the first verse of the Shikshastika. If I go too fast, just tell me to slow down. Okay? And our Slovenian translator over there also. If I go too fast, just say, just raise your hands. You can do this. Tell me. Slow down. Okay. So we would all like to be successful, yes? Everybody would like to be successful? Anybody here want to be a failure? Anybody? Failures? No? Okay. Nobody, when they have children, they don't say to the children, please grow up and be a failure. We're starting a new school in Houston, Texas, and they have some literature. Education for Perfection. So not only do we want to be a success, we want to attain perfection. We want to attain the ultimate. So what is perfection? So Krishna explains this in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, because generally, especially the modern time, our ideas of success and perfection are very distorted. People think success, you know, perfect life. I have a perfect life. That means I have a high status job. Right? I was talking to some Indians, and they told me, they said, you know, I really just want to, what did they want to be? Hey, he wanted to be a teacher. He said, I really wanted to be a teacher. I said, well, what are you? He says, I'm a lawyer. I said, well, why are you a lawyer? He said, well, my family, they would only accept medical doctor, lawyer, or engineer as profession. No, you weren't allowed to study any other profession. So we think like that. We think success means I have a very high status profession. We think success means I make a lot of money. I make some big change in the world, you know, overthrow a communist regime or destroy discrimination or something like that. And we were just recently in South Africa, and on the top of this mountain, there's this huge statue of Mandela, you know, the father of our country, that he's destroyed apartheid. So people think that is success, right? And that you have a happy family, beautiful home, right? But Krishna doesn't define success like that. And we find even if you have all those things, even if you have a high status job, and you have a lot of money, you're very educated, you have a beautiful home, you have an attractive, loving family, right? And you do some good for the world, still, you're not satisfied, isn't it? We all have experience that we get these things that we're told make success, and we get them and we say, is that it? Yeah. Why were they all telling me to get this? It's not really satisfying. So Krishna gives a very different definition. And he says to see the real self, to find the real self. Because all these other things for perfection are for a false self. And Krishna says when we see the real self, we will relish and rejoice in the self. We will be in love with ourself. It's called Atma Rati. Rati is love. You love yourself. We're all trying to fall in love with ourselves. We're going to have... Yes, we're going to have that tomorrow for the Sunday feast in Nanta Prabhu again. You're going to do that again? How to love yourself. How to find pleasure in the self. So, this ourselves are so wonderful that when we see our real self, we have Atma Rama, it's called. Atma Tushti, Atma Rati. To rejoice. Wow, what a wonderful self I am. That's also part of humility, by the way. Humility is you become disgusted with the false self and you rejoice in the real self. And Krishna says that this perfection, you experience happiness without boundaries. If you're a doctor or a medical engineer or a big house or you have a beautiful husband, wife, you have some happiness, but it has a boundary. So Krishna says boundless happiness. And this happiness experienced through transcendental senses. Transcendental senses. So I was just hearing Srila Prabhupada say that just like these eyes, we can only see when there's light. Our eyes are conditioned. But in our spiritual body, our eyes, we can see unconditionally. We can see whether there's light, whether there's not light. Just like sometimes people have an out-of-body experience. You've heard of this? Okay, they're on the surgery table, and their body dies, and they float above their body, and they're seeing their body. How are they seeing their body? Their eyes are in the body. How are they seeing? They have subtle eyes. And people explain in this out-of-body experience, they all explain. They all say the same thing. They said when they're out of their body, they can see 360 degrees. They can see in all directions. And that's just the eyes of the mind. That's not the eyes of the soul. They're not. These people are not free from the mind, from the subtle body. So transcendental senses. We have spiritual senses. Prabhupada said this gross hand, we have this gross hand because we have a spiritual hand. And never departing from the truth. To see the truth always. So people in the mode of ignorance, they never see the truth. They only see illusion. People in passion, they see the truth sometimes. And in goodness, one sees the truth all the time. Wouldn't that be nice to always know the truth? And you would have clear vision to make good decisions, to know what's what. Actually, we don't always see the truth because we don't want to see the truth, but that's something else. And in perfection, one feels, I've gotten the greatest thing. There's nothing more. There's nothing more. And then whatever difficulty comes, one's not disturbed. We think that we will become free from difficulty by adjusting my situation. You know, if I just eat the right food and exercise and see the right doctor, and I just have the right friends, and then I won't have any problems, right? If I just adjust my situation, marry the right person, get the right job, live in the right city, have enough money, then I won't have any difficulty. Here, Krishna is saying that when I see the truth, I will have no difficulty. Difficulty won't touch me. Why is that? Because we don't have any difficulty. A difficulty is an illusion. We're not getting sick. We're not getting anxiety. We don't have any enemies. This is all illusion. And of course, last line is not from the sixth chapter not from that verse in the sixth chapter, but it's from the last verse in the sixth chapter. Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana sharvam bhajateyo mam samayuktatmo mataha. So beyond just seeing the self and being always in truth and being unshaken by difficulty, ultimate perfection is when we are fully in love with Krishna. Okay, so how do we get this perfection? First of all, we get this idea that this is perfection, that perfection isn't just having a dog, you know, or the latest smartphone, or just or having your statue put up in the park, that this is perfection. Okay, well, how do I get there? What's my process? So in different yugas, there were different processes. Right? In Satya Yuga, there was the process of meditation, of Jnana Yoga. And people still try to become perfect in this process. And what does this process entail? If you want to attain success in this process, you have to live alone. You can't live in Budapest, you can't live in Ljubljana or London or New York. I mean, you can't even live at New Rajdham, too many people. Right? You have to live alone. You go to a cave somewhere. Of course, even then, you may get distracted by the deer. Squirrels. But anyway, live alone. And complete celibacy, not even marriage. And then one has to perform different asanas. And you've seen some of these asanas. They're very difficult. As most of us, we have to practice for weeks or months just to do one of them. You know, even if you just want to, like, take both your feet up at the same time. You know? So it's difficult. So these postures, of course, what they do is they put the life air in such a situation that you become very mentally peaceful. And then breathing exercises. Also, these are complicated breathing exercises. And the purpose of these exercises, again, is to put the mind and the body in equilibrium and in trance. And very simple eating, you know, just like roots and berries. So that may sound very romantic until you do it. Yes, yeah, so I remember one year some of my Gurukul students said, let's do Bhima Pankaja. There's this 5 days at the end of Chaturmasya. And they said, you know, let's do this. And we were told to do this only roots and fruits and no salt, no spices, no oils. So the first day was Ekadasi. First day we did a Nirjala Ekadasi. And then the next day, you know, we broke our fast with some roots, some potatoes without salt, you know, without butter. And it was nice just to eat something on the second day after fasting for a day. But then the third day we're still eating that. And the fourth day, by the end of the fourth day, you're like, I want food! Give me something with taste! Right? So it's very difficult. You think, you know, oh, it sounds, oh yes, I will eat fruits and roots, but if you try to eat it, then you see it's not really very pleasant. And complete mental concentration, not allowing the mind to wander, even for a moment. And to be always absorbed in samadhi. So this, of course, is very difficult. Thank you very much. We find, right, just to keep our mind absorbed in something for 5 or 10 minutes is difficult, isn't it? Right? People, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and your mind is going to this thing and that thing and the other thing. So complete samadhi. So that's the process, and there's also dangers. There's many dangers in this process. First of all, you can kind of miss the real perfection. You can end up merging into the Brahman instead of falling in love with Krishna. Or you can think that you're the Paramatma. You can see the Paramatma in your heart and think, oh, that's me. Also in this process, you get a lot of powers. Or you can fly in the sky and you can become very small or very big or very heavy. You can control other people's minds. And so you might get distracted by that and forget all about going to success. It's like if you're taking a journey and then, actually I was just thinking, we lived in New York and our son was going to a Gurukul in Tennessee. So at one point my husband said, we should just move to Tennessee. We should all live there. So he packed up all of his stuff and he was driving to Tennessee. So on the way, he stopped at New Vrindavan just to take some rest, take some prasadam. And the devotees there said, why don't you come here and do service here? So he never went to Tennessee. He got distracted. He calls me up and he says, I'm at New Vrindavan. I said, New Vrindavan? I don't want to go to New Vrindavan. A crazy place. So it was a really, really, really crazy place if you know anything about ISKCON history. Anyway, so thank God we didn't spend very much time there. But anyway, he got distracted. We were going to Tennessee and he got distracted and he ended up at New Vrindavan. So someone can be going to perfection and they get distracted and they get into all these powers. And the other thing is if you don't know what you're doing, you can really damage yourself. So I've met a lot of people who tried this sort of yoga and they ended up having physical illness and even mental illness. And there are some of these yogis today that they can forcibly awaken your kundalini. And again, I've met people, even devotees, you know, who were in these processes and had one of these bogus gurus forcibly awaken their kundalini, which just caused havoc in their bodies. And one devotee I know who is a natural yogi from birth, he said to me that awakening the kundalini in Kali Yuga, for most people, it's like giving a big chainsaw. You know what a chainsaw is? What a chainsaw is? Giving a chainsaw to a three-year-old child. That just causes trouble. So a lot of people, they don't reach perfection, they don't even get any powers, they just simply become disturbed. All right, so that's one method. It's a bona fide method, but in this age it's very dangerous and most people are not qualified to practice it, although it is a bona fide method. So there's another bona fide method, which is sacrifice, sacrificial rituals. So in order to do these sacrifices properly, first of all, you have to be very rich because they require huge amounts of ghee. Early in the movement, there was a wedding, and instead of using ghee for the ghee wicks, the devotees had used butter. So Prabhupada tried to light the wick that was made with butter instead of ghee, and of course it wouldn't light. And Prabhupada said, oh, this marriage will have a very slow start. And the bride started crying. So one has to have a lot of money for these proper sacrifices. Then you also have to have expert priests. Because if you say one word wrong, the whole sacrifice is finished. So there's two stories like this in the Bhagavatam. What are the stories in the Bhagavatam? Oh, Kumbhakarna. That's another story from the Ramayana. That he asked for Indra's asana, and instead it came out Nidrasana. Came out the chair of sleep. Okay, but what are other... That, thank you. Two stories in the Bhagavatam about saying the mantras wrong. Indra, yes. And Vitrasura, that Twasta wanted someone who would be Indra's enemy, but he got someone for whom Indra would be the enemy because he just pronounced the priest pronounced one syllable wrong. What's another story in Bhagavatam also? Ninth canto. This one king wanted a son to be the heir. He had no sons. So he engaged a assistant doing a yajna to have a son. And in the middle of the yajna, the queen went over to the priest and said, I'd actually really like a daughter. So he got distracted and he said the daughter mantra. And then the rituals are very long. Some of these sacrifices go on for dozens of years or hundreds of years. One also has to have a lot of detached knowledge. So then even if you're good at this, there's dangers. Because by doing these yajnas, you can go to the higher planets. So you may become distracted. Again, you may end up at a different destination. And some people feel, okay, well, we'll get perfection by deity worship. So of course, to do deity worship properly is very complicated. I mean, if you really look at the proper regulations for deity worship, just the preparation the pujari has to do in the morning before they go on the altar is about 1 hour. If you've ever read the traditional rituals, all the different bathing and mantras that you have to do for purification. So it's very complicated. And then again, to do proper deity worship is very expensive. And it requires a very clean life. And in our modern day and age, being clean, it's quite difficult. Everything is polluted that we have, isn't it? Very difficult. I mean, unless you go away from everything. So all of these ways for perfection, though, meditation, sacrifice, deity worship. They're all dependent on Krishna's mercy. None of them are independent. None of them, I can achieve perfection on my own. And all of these are combined with chanting mantras, whether you're meditating, whether you're doing sacrifices, whether you're doing deity worship. You need to have the mercy of Krishna and mantras for perfection. And if this is your only process, then in the present age, it's very difficult to find success. However, all three of these are part of our Krishna conscious process. Right? In our Krishna conscious process, we meditate, we do yajnas, we engage in deity worship, but our emphasis is on the chanting of mantras, and particularly the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So why are we putting emphasis on this way of perfection? We do the others. We are supposed to meditate. We are supposed to do sacrifices. We are supposed to worship the deities. But we're emphasizing that our main way of perfection is the Hare Krishna mantra. And I was just reading in Nectar Devotion where Srila Prabhupada says that all nine processes of Krishna consciousness can lead to perfection, and any one of them done perfectly can bring perfection. At the same time, we say in this age of Kali, the emphasis should be on the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, both in japa and in kirtan. So why is that? We see that this chanting of Hare Krishna, it doesn't have any dangers. There's no dangers. There's no risk of something. You know, chanting Hare Krishna, you're not going to risk getting distracted by mystic powers or going to the heavenly planets. It's not going to make you sick by releasing your kundalini. You know, you don't have to worry. Even like Mahaprabhu, he's chanting Jagagada, Jagagada, and still Lord Jagannath was pleased, right? Of course, we should try to pronounce clearly. We shouldn't be saying snick, snick, nom, nom, snick, snick, nom. But even if there's some defect on our part, we don't have to be qualified. All these other methods, you have to be very qualified. But for chanting Hare Krishna, just like Adi Krishna was explaining the other day, the only qualification one needs is sincerity. It's the only qualification one needs is sincerity. I was just reading something from one of my godbrothers that he said when he was very new in the Krishna consciousness movement, that he really wanted to see Krishna in the deity. He wanted to, when he looked at the deity, he didn't want to see metal or stone or wood. He wanted to see the deity. He at that time was serving Panchatattva in Laguna Beach, California. They were making money for the temple. They were going out collecting money and things like that. And they had just collected money for a new red outfit for the deities, but it hadn't been offered yet. But he said for over a year, all day, every day, he was just thinking, I just wish I could actually see the Panchatattva. I wish I could actually see the Panchatattva. I wish I could actually see the Panchatattva. He was just meditating like that for over a year. And then one night when he was in his room, all of a sudden he saw a vision of actually the Panchatattva. And he saw them wearing the clothes that they had made for them but hadn't offered yet. So they were wearing these clothes and they had this great effulgence. So what did he have? Simply a desire. He simply had some sincerity. So that's our only qualification, is our desire and our sincerity. We don't have to be able to live in the forest on roots and berries. We don't have to be able to perfectly chant the Vedic mantras. We don't have to do, you know, an hour ritual in the morning to be clean. Right? We don't have to be able to buy tons of ghee. Simply sincerity. And then what do we get from this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra? So the Hare Krishna mantra cleans the mirror of the heart. Right? Remember Krishna said that perfection is to see the self by the pure mind and to rejoice in the self. So how are we going to see the self? You see the self that our consciousness becomes pure. The Hare Krishna mantra removes the dirt. Now how does the Hare Krishna mantra do that? Because it's Krishna himself. It's Krishna and his internal energy themselves. And they are very effulgent. They are very full of light. So they light up the heart. And then one sees things as they are. One sees there is Krishna, and one sees there is Maya, and one can properly choose to get rid of the Maya and to see Krishna. It's not that the holy name cleans the heart without our conscious or willing participation. It's not like that. But the holy name Gyanadipenabhashvata, it opens up our consciousness. It opens our eyes. It lights up the room so we can see clearly. And then, just like Krishna says to Arjuna, now do what you want to do. What would you like to choose? Then we can choose clearly. And then in the mirror of our heart, we will see the self and we will see Krishna. And the holy name puts out the fire of materialistic life. It puts out the fire of materialistic life. So what is this fire of materialistic life? The fire of materialistic life is the sense of dissatisfaction. I've gotten the money. They say whenever people have money, they always want 10% more money than what they have. No matter how much money they get, this is the research. A person doesn't feel, oh, now I'm satisfied. I read a very interesting article by somebody in the finance industry like that, how he got involved in the investment industry. And, you know, he was making like $10 million a year. And he said, you know, I had no wife and children. I wasn't giving money to some charity. What did I need all this money for? He said, but still, I just wanted more and more and more and more and more. Why? Because it's not satisfying to the heart. It's not satisfying to the heart. A person has one husband, one wife, and they, oh, let me get somebody else. Let me get somebody else. Right, they have their big TV, and then they want a bigger TV. And then they want a fancier TV. Right, when I was a little girl, there were 3 television stations. Now there's, what, like 500 or something like that. Right. More and more and more and more. Why? Why does a person want more and more and more? Because it's not satisfying. Material things are not satisfying. And we can explain many reasons. But one of them, the main one, is they're not touching the self. They're not real. I give this example all the time, that one time on a fast day, I took a little rest, and in my dream, I was dreaming that I was drinking water because I was thirsty. So in my dream, I was drinking, you know. So I had that glass of water, and I drank the whole glass of water. And then in my dream, I drank another glass of water, and then another glass of water. And then in my dream, I got a big jug of water. And I was in my dream, I was pouring this jug of water down my throat. And then somehow in the dream, I got some awareness. This must be a dream. And then I woke up. And I thought, oh, that's why I wasn't satisfied, because it was dream water. It wasn't real water. So all material happiness is dream water. It's not touching the self. As Krishna explains in the 5th chapter and the 13th chapter. And therefore, just like in my dream, I wanted more water, more water, more water, more, because it wasn't actually water. So in this world, we get something and then we want more and more and more. So instead, we should take shelter of the holy name, which, like Krishna, swallows the fire. So the other day, we had a nice meditation on Krishna swallowing the fire, right? That was the second. Some of you were here for that? The second forest fire. The first forest fire, Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, is conflict between devotees. And the second forest fire is adharma. Adharma. So the chanting of the holy name, Krishna swallows this fire of adharma. He relieves. How does Krishna relieve this distress? How does Krishna swallow up this fire of distress? With a cooling moon of good fortune that opens the Kairava, the white lotus. Actually, the Kairava blooms at night. It opens the lotus of the heart, and then we feel completely satisfied. The way that this fire is extinguished by the holy name gives us complete satisfaction. We realize the holy name is Krishna and Radharani and Mahaprabhu, and the whole spiritual world is there in the holy name. And there is our service and our identity. So we feel fully satisfied that we have real fortune. not fortune in money and fortune in homes and in fame and knowledge of the world, but fortune in our real identity. And the holy name is called Vidya Vadu Jivanam. Vidya is knowledge, Vadu is a bride. And this bride gives life. So generally speaking, if a man lives alone, he doesn't usually fix up his house, usually. But as soon as he marries, then the woman comes and says, oh, we need some beautiful curtains over here, and some nice cushions here on the couch, and let's put some paintings on the wall, right? Generally. I mean, some men also fix up their house, and some women don't care. But generally speaking, when you have the bride, she comes and she brings life to the house. Like Mahaprabhu said, just having a home doesn't make you a grihastha, you have to have a wife. Okay? If you just have a house without a wife, it's dead, there's no life in it. The woman is cooking beautiful things and making the house fragrant. So the holy name also gives life. It's full of life. Just transcendental knowledge. I'm not this body. This world is temporary. This world is illusory. That's transcendental knowledge, but it's not full of fragrance and beauty and life, right? It's like some, you know, it's like the Brahmacharya ashram. But when you have the holy name, then the women come in and decorate. Yeah. And make it beautiful. So the holy name makes everything beautiful. The holy name makes everything full of beauty and fragrance and life. So it's not just I'm not this body, but it's I'm Krishna's servant. And not just I'm Krishna's servant, but I'm Krishna's servant as his servant, as his mother or father, as his cowherd boy, as his gopi. What is my service? It becomes full of life. Everything is revealed. And the holy name Anandam Gudivardhanam, it increases the ocean of spiritual bliss. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says that although the jiva is finite, we have the capacity for infinite bliss. We are finite. How is it that if we are finite, we have the capacity for infinite bliss? How is that possible? How do you put infinite bliss in a finite container? Do you know how? Infinite, yes. Because we are part of Krishna, and Krishna is infinite. So just like if you go to Vrindavan, you go to Radhakund when they're cleaning. So you see there's like the container for Radhakund, right? Raghunandas Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they had Radhakund excavated. And at the bottom of Radhakund there's a spring. You all know what a spring is? Water that comes up from the ground. So it keeps filling it. So if you look at the concrete, you can say it has this boundaries, but in the bottom there's a spring that keeps filling it. So we may have our boundaries, but if we're connected to Krishna, Krishna's like a spring that keeps filling our heart. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnat Udachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vasishtate. You can take infinity minus infinity, you still have infinity. So Krishna can fill us with unlimited bliss, and he still has unlimited bliss more. And you can say, well, what happens to all that unlimited bliss in my limited heart? What happens to it? What happens when you fill a limited container with something unlimited? It what? Flows over. It doesn't explode. Flows over. Exploding, that wouldn't be right. No, it overflows. It overflows. Like I have this cup. It's limited. But if I started pouring water, the cup wouldn't explode. It would overflow. Right? This is even in the Bible where David says, my cup is overflowing. So this is the reason the devotees are merciful. Because they're just overflowing everywhere with ecstasy. It's just flooding out of their hearts. So Prabhupada says in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, when Sanjaya says that just remembering this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, I feel a thrill at every moment. And Prabhupada says when we're connected with Krishna, you don't just get a temporary thrill sometimes, but there's a thrill at every moment. Why? Because as the Lord's form and pastimes are flowing unlimitedly into the heart, it's full of joy. There's this constant thrill, newer and newer. It's not static. It's not like you realize Krishna and now, okay. Now I've realized Krishna. Okay, done. Now what? But Krishna is always expanding. There's always surprises. There's always adventures. Even Krishna is always expanding. Then his knowledge of himself expands. Then he expands. So Krishna is always finding out more about himself also. Krishna is always getting more thrilled, finding out more about himself. He's thinking, what's it like to be my devotee? And he comes as Mahaprabhu. And he's always discovering newer and newer things about himself. So in chanting, we have this unfolding of newer and newer wonders. And it's also like a refreshing bath. So probably here we don't experience it very much. But if you go to a very hot place, a couple years ago I was in Mayapur in August, and it was so hot. I mean, it was so hot and so humid that if you were outside in the middle of the day for even 15 or 20 minutes, you'd just be like, ugh. It felt like your brain was cooking in a pot on the stove and that you couldn't think. You know, after an hour or two in the heat, I'd be just like, my brain's not working. And the only thing you could do was to take a bath. That was all you could do, you know. Everybody's running to the Ganga. And if you couldn't run to the Ganga, you just found some cold water and started pouring over your head. And so the holy name is like this refreshing bath that reveals the true self. It washes away, just like when you're hot and sweaty and you're working outside, you're all full of dirty sweat, right? Blech, and your clothes are all dirty. It's so nice to take off all the muddy clothes and wash all the sweat, isn't it? So this holy name is like that. It washes off all the envy and greed. Again, we have to want that. Prabhupada says if you don't want to remove the dust from your heart, if you want to keep things as they are, we can chant Hare Krishna officially, mechanically, and it will not have this effect. But if one chants, please Krishna, engage me in your service, meditating on Krishna. Like Prabhupada says, when we chant Hare Krishna, we should remember Krishna's pastimes. He said, remember how Krishna's killing the demons and the coward boys are clapping, or you remember Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, don't just chant mechanically and think of nonsense, then it will not have any effect. It will be very slow. But when we meditate on Krishna, it's like this bath. So only victorious. Other methods have dangers. Other methods need qualification. But the chanting of the holy name, it needs no qualification except sincerity, and it has no dangers. Thank you. So I hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
A little meditation on the first verse of the Shikshastika. We have the lights. I think we have time for just one or two questions. We have a conference today. Anybody has any questions or comments? Everybody just wants to chant Hare Krishna now? Hare Krishna Mahamantra Ki Jai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Premananda. Oh, there's a question, yes. Where? Yes? No. Okay. Hare Krishna.